racetracks around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsport.
Hi, I'm Peter Norton.
I'm Craig Revelle. Thanks for joining us once again on Inside Motorsport. Tonight, the German Grand Prix will be on in earnest, and whilst there was a few surprises in qualifying, Jonathan Ledyard has all the details.
Juan Pablo Montoya has served notice that his mid-season crisis in Monaco and Montreal is well and truly behind him. Then he careered into the barriers. Here, he silenced his teammates' home crowd with a lap of shining brilliance. He edged him out by just 19 thousandths of a second.
Oh, it's really good, you know, we worked really hard all year, and it's been like up and down, and we finally got it together. You know, the car has been really good since yesterday, so, you know, it definitely was about time getting all the sectors together and lap together. You know, this morning I was a tenth of Ralph in the sectors, but in lap time was like 3 or 4 tenths, so that cost me a little bit, but afterwards it was, you know, we got it together, and Patrick had a little chat with me before qualifying, and it really helped. And I was very pleased, you know, the car was working really well. We did a change for the last run, and I was coming to 10 stop already on my time, and when Ralph crossed the line, they told me to back off, so it's good. You know, we got exactly the same car, and the same launch control and everything, so it should be okay. You know, it's a long straight. I think important to go well through the first corner. We'll see, you know, we'll see what happens. If I'm in a position to lead, I'll lead. If something goes wrong or something in the start, and I need to be second, I'll be second. You know, you don't win the race in the first corner, but, you know, we'll give it a good go tomorrow.
Ralf Schumacher did attempt a recovery, but found himself crowded out in the last-minute scramble, made worse by Jenson Button's blown engine.
Necessary to do a second or fourth run if we needed to, otherwise we wouldn't have had the time in case we had to go to scale. So we had to take that moment, which was the very worst we could take anyway. I mean, you know, I've never been anywhere close to the first row in Hockenheim, so I'm pretty pleased. I think the two of us, you know, were quicker than anyone else, so I think we have a promising race in front of us tomorrow, and it's all what counts. I mean, I am the first row, so I've got every chance.
Michael Schumacher hardly got a sniff. His personal bests were almost a second slower than the Williams, and he had to be content with fourth. Mika Häkkinen was a little better off in third.
I lost some running time, but not too much. And team was able to solve those problems. And at the track, you know, we did improve the balance all the way through this morning. And the engineers did a fantastic work with the car. And I think the car is handling better than ever here in Hockenheim. It's obviously impossible to say is that going to happen, but if these guys, if they can maintain the speed what they had in the qualifying for tomorrow, I could say we have no chance. So let's hope something goes a little bit wrong for them tomorrow.
No, guys.
And David Coulthard in the gravel in the morning largely chased his tail to take fifth. He now faces a serious slog tomorrow to prevent his title chances burning out in the stifling heat. Jordan's week got worse. Heinz Alfredsson's replacement, Ricardo Zonta, was 15th. Jarno Trulli recorded a season's lowest in 10th. Both the Saubers were ahead. Heidfeld 7th and Raikkonen 8th. And the Jaguars both profited. Pedro De La Rosa up to 9th, Eddie Irvine 11th. Jenson Button, before that white smoke, was 18th.
A first lap crash eliminated Australia's Mark Webber from the ninth round of the International Formula 3 Championship at the German Grand Prix at Hockenheim, leaving him 10 points off the series lead. Starting 7th on the grid, Webber was out within a minute of the start in the 150-kilometre race after a collision with British driver Darren Manning. Brazilian Antonio Pinzona scored his first Formula 3000 victory, whilst championship leader Justin Wilson of Britain finished second, earning 6 points to go to 49. Webber remaining on 39. Thomas Eng of the Czech Republic has 36 points after he added 2 for his 5th place at Hockenheim. Webber returns to Australia for a short tour this week, still hopeful he can overhaul Wilson for the title in the remaining 3 rounds of the series. But Hungary, Italy and Belgium.
This weekend it was round number 8 of the Australian Touring Car Championship at Oran Park. There's plenty of eyes on the weather, but it stayed dry for the racing, and it was Mark Scaife who ended up cruising to pretty comfortable victory in both race 1 and race number 2. A commanding victory, even through the pit stops and all of the various barriers that are put in front of him. Probably the standout performance this weekend was David Bernard. David's had plenty of troubles throughout the season so far, and it's great to see him up the front. Also up the front was Craig Lowndes. And we caught up to all these drivers and more, and we'll have that later in the program.
The Indy Racing League went to Nashville for its first ever appearance on the concrete super speedway. Mike King and the team from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway were at the track for all the action. Here's the highlights of the conclusion of the race, courtesy of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network.
A winner at Pikes Peak, a winner at Richmond. Mikey's coming out for another one. For the third time in the last four events, Buddy Lazier will see the checkered flags as he wins the Harrah's Indy 200.
And Mike King, the IRL, really did grace the Super Speedway with a lot of courage and bravado, and of course Buddy Lazier, what can you say about him going on to another victory in this year's Northern Light Series.
I'll tell you how this Harrah's Indy 200 finished up. Buddy Lazier is the winner. His last lap, 184.686 miles an hour. He didn't have to push it there at the end. He turned a lap in this race, the fastest lap we believe we saw, 199.1 mile an hour. And that is really cooking around this mile and a third concrete paved oval.
My guys, what a performance from my team. Great pit stops. Great race car. Hard battle, these slippery racetracks. They're car kind of track, you know, and just a real hard fought battle. My wife's at home, sick with the flu. With my son, and I got it now too, and this is for them, you know. I just want, they've been to every race since we've been together, and what an awesome night for us. We just had a couple close ones, but you know, that's short track racing. This series is so competitive. There's going to be close racing, and I don't have any problems with anybody out there. Good, clean race. A lot of fun, actually, but pretty demanding. Really had to stay up on the wheel. I just can't believe it. I did not expect to do this, and especially tonight. And if we can climb, if we can climb up there and challenge that yellow Pennzoil car and Sam Hornish, we'd be awful happy about that.
Billy Boat winds up second.
When you get that close, you always want to win. But the Kurt Brucker's car did a great job for me. You know, with just tracks like this, it's easy to get caught in traffic. We got caught out kind of a ton behind two lap cars when we were leading, and Buddy got by us, and you know, it's just tough to pass. And then we didn't really get the brakes we needed in traffic, but. You know, we're still gaining. This team's really coming together. They're doing a great job. And, you know, I just want to thank Mike Curb, the whole Curb Records gang, and everybody on the team. They're doing a great job. And, you know, we're looking forward to keeping this thing going.
Jacques Lazier is third, but once again finds the wall following the checkered flag. So Jacques Lazier is okay out of the car, but it's going to cost the Sam Schmidt Motorsports team to repair that car. Robbie McGee winds up fourth.
What a great race. The team did such an awesome job in the pit stops, and everything just went our way. We kept our nose clean, had a great car. You know, the car was consistent throughout the whole race, and I'm just really excited for the whole Cahill Racing team. It's our best finish to date, and we're all pretty happy with it.
Fifth place goes to Scott Sharp. Sam Hornish Jr. winds up in sixth place, despite the fact that with about 60 laps to go, he loses a cylinder, and he has to run the final 60 or 70 laps with just seven cylinders. Shige Hattori is seventh. Felipe Giafone is eighth. Buzz Calkins is ninth, and Donnie Beetzler is 10th. Eliseo Salazar, 11th. Billy Rowe is 12th. Robbie Buell, 13th. Alan Sir Jr., 14th. 15th place goes to Eddie Cheever. Mark Dismore is 16th. Ayrton Dari is 17th. Greg Ray, 18th. Sarah Fisher, 19th. Jeff Ward, 20th. Didier Andre, 21st. The biggest incident of the night, a multi-car incident involving six drivers, Eddie Cheever, Ayrton Dari, Greg Ray, Donnie Beetzler, Mark Dismore, and Al Unser Jr. Beetzler, however, was able to return to the track. 11 lead changes among the drivers leading this evening. Buddy Lazier, our winner. Sam Hornish Jr., Eliseo Salazar, Billy Boat, the 99 machine of Jacques Lazier, and the number 10 car of Robbie McGee. All of those cars leading. The number of laps led by Sam Hornish, 87 laps led by Sam Hornish Jr., 66 laps led by Buddy Lazier, which means the two bonus points will go to Sam Hornish Jr. With his sixth place finish and the two bonus points, Sam Hornish Jr. will earn 30 points, while Buddy Lazier will earn 50 points. That means that the points lead for Sam Hornish Jr. goes from 60 to 40 as we get set to go to Kentucky Speedway here in just a couple of weeks.
Well, a man who has managed to trounce the opposition quite convincingly this year in the Formula Holden Australian Drivers' Championship is Rick Kelly. Brenton Ramsey, you've got to enjoy all his performances, and for a rookie, he certainly has a very level head on his shoulders.
Yeah, look, Rick has done a fantastic job. You've got to remember as well, I guess, that it is rookie year in Formula Holden, and I don't think that any Formula Holden rookie has won the championship before, given that he's taken the wins today and taken the championship out in his very first attempt.
He was out there trying to break one more record, which was the outright Oran Park circuit lap record, which I believe is 1 minute 1.67 seconds. Was he able to grab that one record?
Didn't he manage to get close? So he only managed a 102.5 in the second race today, which wasn't quite close enough to pit the lap record here, which is actually held by Tim Lay back in last year, set in his Reynard. So Rick did come away with the two wins, but not the lap record, so not a clean sweep, but still a pretty good haul.
Mm. It was an interesting day's racing because Alan Gurr from New South Wales was able to upset the apple cart a little bit by getting a good second place in race number one when Christian Murchison had some problems.
Yeah, well, it was actually high drama at the start of race one because what happened for Christian Murchison, he was a little bit late getting into the car and they were had the car prepared in the dummy grid ready to roll out, and then they experienced some sort of electrical problem, and I think it ended up being a fuel pump that some sort of wiring had gone astray in the car, and the team were actually working furiously trying to fix that up. Meanwhile, the cars were out on the parade lap and then on the warm-up lap, and he wasn't able to start once he had the car running because it was just too late. So he went to the back of the field in race two and charged through and managed to get through to second in race two, but not the best race one for Christian Murchison at all.
Mm. Now, for Peter Hills from Victoria, he also had a good third place, a career best.
Yeah, Peter Hill had a pretty good run. He's been coming on stronger and stronger as the year goes forward, and they've also been doing a few little aerodynamic tweaks on that car, amongst other things. So, yeah, he was quite good in race one and ended up fourth in race two, and actually a third position overall on the day. So a good result from Peter Hill and the M111 machine.
Mm. Of course, the outright honours are going for the Gold Star Championship, but in the Silver Star Championship, Terry Clearahan has been campaigning all year, and now at Oran Park he's managed to take the lead in the Silver Star points.
Yeah, well, it's turned around for Terry here in the fact that he's gone to the lead in the championship now for the Silver Star. And I guess people might remember if they went to the track at Canberra and they saw Terry's great dice with Hill, and also maybe on trackside they've seen it. Again, Terry and Peter going head-to-head here at Oran Park and having a great battle. But excellent result for Terry now to the lead in the Silver Star with two rounds to contest, and it will actually be on Ian Peters' home track at Malala the next round, so that could be interesting. There could be a real battle going on there, and it's good to see the Silver Star battle going right down to the wire.
Yeah, still is plenty of racing in the Formula Holdens, even though Kelly has sort of stunk up the show a little bit this year.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we've still got two rounds to go now in the championship. Now Rick's wrapped up the championship at this stage, so I guess in one way he can relax and maybe just focus on things like those lap records and really hone his skills. But there's a few interesting things on the cards for Formula Holden in these last two rounds. I think you'll see a number of new drivers or a number of drivers coming into the category in these last two races now that the championship battle is off, that will be looking to get their eye in Formula Holden and also trying to get a race win.
Well, Brenton, the championship moves up to Malala as part of the Konica support program, and really it's going to be interesting to see all the developments that are happening in Formula Holden, of course, with the two rounds left to run.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a good round up at Malala, and obviously supporting the Konicas, which will be a championship battle going down to the wire as well there at Malala. So I guess from a Barana Racing point of view and the Team Dynamic guys in the supercar ranks of the Konica series, they'll be looking for a win there, but a busy time for them because they'll also be running the Formula Holden of Rick Kelly, and in fact I'll also be stepping back into the cockpit for that particular round at Malala and also at Winton, so the Barana boys are going to have their hands full, and there will be plenty of racing action there in Formula Holden, that is for sure.
Well, look forward to having a chat to you after the Malala round, and perhaps we'll be talking about your own podium finish.
Well, I'm not sure we can go that far, but it'll be great to have another run, and hopefully we can talk about those sort of things come then. But thanks for your time today, Craig.
Well, congratulations, Rick Kelly, picking up the Gold Star Championship in Formula Holden, and the Rookie Championship on top of it. A fairly successful weekend for you at Oran Park.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great weekend. It's great to be able to pick up the championship so early in the season, and I'm also thrilled to pick up the Rookie of the Year. It's been great for me this year. The team have done a great job to get me speed so early in the season.
The Young Lions car has certainly served you well, but what would you say has been the biggest advantage for you this season?
I guess it's to be with such a great team. I mean, another advantage, I guess, would be that there's not too many cars in the category this year.
For yourself, though, an interesting day's racing today with Christian Murchison having dramas and brought up, a few different drivers towards the top of the grid.
Yeah, I mean, it was a bit disappointing to see Jeanette on the first race. I was expecting a really close race. He's generally pretty good off the start, so it was a bit disappointing he wasn't up there. But nevertheless, I've pulled off the championship, so I'm really happy.
And for yourself, what's the next step? Because two more rounds in the Formula Holdens, but obviously you'll be looking for some more driving plans before the end of this season.
I'm not too sure. You know, I guess we'll just wait and see what's going to be on the cards towards the end of the year. But I've got these two endurance drives with Kmart, so I guess I'll just be concentrating on those for the rest of the year.
And have you done much testing in the supercars yet?
Yeah, I've had a couple of test days with the Kmart team, and it's gone really well, so I'm looking forward to getting to the car at Queensland 500.
Well, we wish you all the best for that, and of course, up at Malala, I would imagine that your focus now is race wins, number one, but then trying to take as many of the lap records and other associated things along for the ride.
Yeah, I guess I'll be out there to probably take a few more risks now that I've got the championship sewn up and try and get a couple of records.
And on top of that, taking the Rookie Championship, so it's obviously shows that you are very adaptable to each of the tracks you've gone to and with the settings.
Yeah, I guess it's a bit lucky like that. I've taken the changes from Formula 4 to Formula Holden on board really quickly. I guess one of the big advantages for my career was Peter Hill giving me the drive in New Zealand last year, which gave me a bit of a head start. I had the round over there, so I guess that was a big bonus as well.
Well, congratulations on your success this weekend, and we wish you all the best for, of course, the two long distance races and the two final rounds of the championship.
Okay, thanks very much.
Welcome to the Honda Champ Car Update. I'm Jim Murphy. Join me now as we make a visit to the fast-paced world of the kart series. Teamwork with the order of the day as the FedEx Championship Series bids farewell to the fabulous 2 Mile Michigan Speedway when Alex Tagliani helped his teammate Patrick Carpentier earn a breakthrough victory. As is often the case at Michigan, the weekend didn't start out anything like it ended. Qualifying was rained out on Saturday with the field set based on Saturday's practice times. Teammates Kenny Brack and Max Pappas started on the front row and set the pace for 232 circuits before they touched in turn three, sending them both into the wall. However, in typical Michigan fashion, it was all excitement on the last lap. Michelle Jourdain Jr. led with only a handful to go, but when the lap car of Alex Tagliani moved around the leaders on the final circuit, he became everyone's worst nightmare except for his teammate Carpentier. With the help of Tagliani's draft, Carpentier took the win over Dario Franchitti and Michelle Jourdain Jr.
Yeah, we're close, and when I was second there on the last yellow flag, the car I had behind me was exactly the same as the one I had in Detroit. It was a Dario. And I could remember Detroit pretty well. And I said, man, not this time. I want to win this one. And I knew we couldn't lead before the end because we had a little bit more wing, but I could be flat around the whole racetrack quite easily. So I was hoping to be close enough to try to win at the end, but not up the front. And it was a little bit of a little bit of luck and a little bit of timing to be up there, and towards the end of the last few laps, men were battling hard and almost touching wheels, and then suddenly a tag came along. I didn't expect that, and after he came in, the first time he came in, I said, man, what is he doing? But finally, I was pretty happy, I must admit. But did a good job. I guess that's what teams are for. And today it helped team players and myself to win my first victory.
It was literally a photo finish for second with Frank Keating and Jourdain tying at the line.
It was an eventful day because for the first time in my career I started last because of the way they decided qualifying positions yesterday with the practice and all that nonsense. So I was still in last, and it was a case of wanting to be reasonably aggressive that first stint, make sure not get lapped. And I was so close to being lapped at one point. Nemo was actually alongside me and gaining when the yellow came out. So I was really lucky to not go a lap down. My guys did a great job all day in the pits, consistent, you know, pit stops. We played around with the car, got it a bit more to our liking. And then all came down to that last segment after the yellow. And I didn't think they had anything for the guys in front. I thought Brian was looking particularly strong. And then Michelle and I got away a bit, and we just kept passing and repassing, and I was noticing a bit of a trend that if I could just hang on round three and four flat, then I could get in his draft and get past him before start-finish line. And I was thinking, okay, this could be a plan here. And I wasn't concerned about leading out of turn two in the last lap, because I knew Michelle could get past me. I can maybe get past him again in time. That was the plan. But then Pat made a good move. And then Tag came in as the spoiler. It's unfortunate because he was a lap down, and his move was only designed to do one thing. I'm very happy for Pat. I'm not taking anything away from Pat. It was a great race. He drove a wonderful race all day, but Tag shouldn't have been doing what he was doing. He created a very dangerous situation. And I'll be having a word with him about it afterwards, because up until that point everybody was driving very well all day. But it was close. Coming up that finish line, it was close. And I'm glad for Pat. You know, we started the series at the same time together. And I was saying to him, there, it was at St. Louis in 97. Both had a shot at the win. He went out with, I think, mechanical. Well, where did you finish second that day? He finished second. Paul passed him. I went out of mechanical. And since then, he's been knocking on the door. And it's very good to see him up here.
Michelle Jourdain Jr.'s third place run was clearly the strongest kart performance of his career.
It was an unbelievable race. I mean, I'm really proud of to be part of this series, and obviously the courtesy of the Penthouse team did an amazing job. All the pit stops were perfect. If we didn't lose positions, we made positions in the pit. And the plan was just to stay in the lead group. That's what we did the first 450 miles, and attack at the end, you know, and everything went according to the plan. But here the blue guys got in the way. And the last lap, I was sure it was going to be between Dario and I, you know. We were like, I thought I was going to get him. Obviously, it was going to be very close. And suddenly, obviously, Patrick was there all the time, but Alex appeared from the nowhere, from heaven, just appeared and got in the way, and I had to lift a lot. I didn't take Dario out by a miracle. My right front, the car just went straight, and my right front got in between both his left tires. I thought we were gonna hit each other, but I managed to get it back down, and I think it should be the other way. If we tied first, I think we should get both points for second.
With a second place finish coupled with Brack's DNF, Frank Keating moves within 3 points of Brack, 84-81 in the championship hunt. They're followed by Elio Castroneves, Michael Andretti, and Cristiano D'Amata. Next up for the FedEx Championship Series is the Mile Oval at the Chicago Motor Speedway.
Each week, the Honda Champ Car Update brings you the latest news from the world of karts, straight from the track and directly from the driver's mouth. This experience is brought to you by the folks at Honda. Racing is part of who Honda is, and you can see that by visiting www.hondaracing.com.
And thanks once again to Jim Murphy for the Honda Champ Car update. And we'll be looking after the break at qualifying for the round at Chicagoland Motor Speedway. Also, up after the break, we take a look at all the news and views from Oran Park Raceway.
Inside Motorsport will return after these messages.
Life can be cruel, not a lot you can do, but it helps if you've got a friend you can share with, comfort and care with. There's nothing quite like a friend, nothing quite like a friend.
For more than 70 years, Lorna has played the pipe organ for church and charity. Now she's been given something in return, the Order of Australia and a delightfully affectionate Petzl's therapy companion dog called Ebony. Because of her frail condition, Lorna only occasionally plays the pipe organ these days, but still loves to play piano at home, usually to a highly appreciative audience of one, Ebony. You can help the Guide Dog Association train more pets and therapy companion dogs like Ebony by sending your donation today.
Sure, you can whistle while you work. Or you can tune your radio off the music and onto a winner with 103.9 Triple S FM Racing.
They're off. McLaren and Torpedo fast away.
Inline Racing now on the Gamber approaching cover.
In the straight, the first time under the winning post with three to go. $24,000 of each trifecta there.
Be a winner while you work on the National Racing and Sporting Service 103.9 Triple S FM. Inside Motorsport, from the racetrack to your radio.
We're racing at Oran Park. Wasn't confined just to the V8s. We already heard that Rick Kelly has once again dominated a Formula Holden round. And in Formula Ford, racing of round 5 of the championship at Oran Park was like a walk in the park for teenager Will Davison, who completely dominated proceedings, winning race 1 by over 9 seconds and taking the second by nearly 6. In the first race, both the Van Diemen's of Will Davison and Jamie Wincup's McGull got equally good starts, but Davison managed to take the lead in the first corner, closely followed by the Spectrum of Nick Ackland and Jason Cotter. Starting from sixth on the grid, Stuart Costera soon began to make a charge in his Van Diemen. Early in the race, he moved to fourth, just clear of Van Diemen's of Christel and Marcus Marshall. Will Power, in another Van Diemen, also drove hard, knowing he would need a good result to keep the pressure on championship leader Davison. Power qualified 7th and midway through the race had worked up to 3rd position. Wincup's hopes of a podium finish were dashed when the young driver experienced mechanical problems and failed to finish the race. In the meantime, Power made his way into 2nd. A little further back, Marshall and Aglin tussled for 4th position, and it became a battle for 3rd after Power damaged his gearbox on the 12th lap of the race, and it saw it ending there. In the second race, it was a similar affair, with Davison taking the lead into Turn 1 and being closely followed by Costera, Marshall, Aglin and Dell. The main interest in the race was being where Power, Wincup and Cotter would finish up, considering they were starting from the rear of the grid. Both Wincup and Power quickly made their way through the field, Power eventually finishing in 7th and Wincup a further place behind. Marshall and Costera staged a battle for 2nd position, the Queenslander eventually succeeding and taking an overall 2nd place for the round. Costera once again making the podium for 3rd. The race was cut short after a red flag appeared in the 9th lap after a competitor spun and coming to rest in a dangerous position. So the championship positions after the 5 rounds: Davison is on 188 points, Will Power is 149, Costera 99, Wincup 84, Jones 74, Marshall 55, Aglin 54, Dell 42, Clark 38 and Hanger on 28 points. We now go to this report from Tom Michaels from the Kart Radio Network on qualifying for this weekend's event.
Tom Pekanon wins his 2nd career Kart FedEx Championship Series pole, taking the top spot for Sunday's Target Grand Prix at Chicago Motor Speedway. and on toward the one-mile circuit at just over 160 miles an hour, just edging Elio Castro Neves.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so happy. I think it's been a while. It's the first pole for Monan in Hollywood, so I'm so happy. I think, Larry, we've been doing things right. We've been knocking on the door for a long time, and my time has come, and we just need to work for the race tomorrow.
Castro Neves might have beaten Kanaan, but ran out of fuel on the second qualifying lap.
I don't know what's going on. I don't know what the guy's thinking, but hey, I guess the mainly thing was the setup. The car was very good. All of a sudden, out of the blue, my engineer, Ibarra, did a hell of a job changing all the car. And I couldn't believe when I was, like, right there, you know. Especially when it's slowing down. We were, like, a tenth and a half quick on the back straightaway.
Adrian Fernandez.
A lot of things can happen, you know, this, you know, if some of the guys in front start having a bad trend and we start getting our luck, then anything can happen. So we have our hopes very high, and we just have to keep doing what we're doing.
Mimo Gidley and Alex Zanardi round out the top five. Among others, points leader Kenny Breck starts eighth, Dario Franchitti 10th, and Michael Andretti 17th. From Chicago, Tom Michaels reporting.
This weekend, it was round 8 of the Australian Touring Car Championship where the V8 Touring Cars went to Oran Park in front of 25,000 people in pretty average weather. The rain did stay away, but it was cold and windy and quite miserable. A lot of the talking points this weekend was about new stuff, new buildings, new facilities and new cars. Craig Lowndes did not debut his new car this weekend, waiting to fix up a few other little things on it before trying that out at Queensland Raceway in a few weeks. HRT has also got a brand new car for Mark Scaife, which will also be coming out in the next couple of races. But the car that was new, at least for a little while, was the car of Paul Morris. Englishman Matt Neal was driving that car on Saturday afternoon, and unfortunately he made quite a mess of it. We caught up to Paul Morris to ask a little bit about what happened.
Really got the car on the pace, and it's showing, really. And just behind us there is your brand new car, and it's not looking so brand new.
It's pretty second hand, so I think we'll have to put that one in the bin and start again.
Is it really that badly damaged?
Yeah, it's that sort of got it right through the cage, bent the fore, and done a fair bit of damage to it. So, at this stage, it looks like it's not real flash, but we'll get it home, pull it apart, see what's salvageable.
Because that was your brand new car that you're hoping to take to a successful Bathurst.
Yeah, well, we were. It's not what you can say. It's now history, so we'll have to keep going.
So, what's your strategy now? Do you quickly try to rebuild a new car, or is the old car still pretty good?
We'll build another one as quickly as we can and just try and keep this one going as well.
Awful luck there for Paul Morris. I don't know if he even had a chance to drive the brand new car, and as he said, it looks like it's one for the bin. Very expensive exercise there, and it'll be interesting to see if Matt Neal is kept in the Big Kev Racing team long term, considering that's what he's done. I think their friendship's pretty strong and they understand that these sorts of things happen. But moving into race one, it was Craig Lowndes who had pole position, had a pretty good run in the top 10 shootout and was very happy to have his first pole position of the year. He was not quite so happy with his start. It was a fairly slow start for Lowndes off the line. Mark Scaife had a better start, but David Bernard had the best start still. And turn one got pretty interesting, with Ambrose and Murphy having a bit of a come together, and Donoher and Altitude Commodore also coming in there, helping to make a bit of a mess of it. We spoke to Murphy to find out a little bit about what happened in turn one.
It looks like Marcus Ambrose sort of tried to find a hole that wasn't there and catapulted into the door, which pushed me into Mark Larkin, which ruined both their races, Mark's and mine. So pretty disappointed about that.
And what is it that actually put you out of the race?
The steering's broken.
So that's easily fixed, ready for an attack in race two?
No, not easily fixed, but boys have got a fair bit of work to do. The rear of the car is very badly damaged as well after someone else rammed up the back of that, so we'll get there.
After the turn one incident, we had to sort of hold our breath to see what came out the other end, and it was Mark Scaife in front from Kmart's half-teammate Todd Kelly, David Bernard doing very well, and as I said, Craig Lowndes had a bit of an average start there in race one. Race one became a little bit processional there for a couple of minutes at least until the pit stop started. Most of the pit stops were reasonably orderly, except Paul Radisich having an awful luck with a wheel nut problem, and his pit stop took the whole 45 seconds, and that ruined the weekend for Paul. Jason Bright also had a somewhat slow stop, which allowed Craig Lowndes to take a bit of pressure off Lowndes and let Lowndes move up somewhat. So throughout the rest of the race, Mark Scaife really did cruise to a pretty comfortable victory. But there was a useful amount of action in behind that. David Bernard settled into second position after the pit stops, and the question then was whether Craig Lowndes could come up and catch Bernard. Craig Lowndes did in fact systematically catch and pass Bernard, and we'll have a chat to Bernard a little bit later to catch up on his thoughts about race number one. After them, it was Todd Kelly from Stephen Johnson, Tander from Ingle, McConville and Bright. Jason Bright having a fairly ordinary pit stop, as I mentioned. But Bright really did put in the drive of the day across both races. Bright moved up past McConville, past Ingle, past Tander, but Tander did repass, I think it was the last lap or so, to regain that position. Running out the top 10 at that point was Barguana from Glen Seaton. Seaton was having a rather miserable weekend. A couple of interesting things further back in the field. Gary Holt, quite famous from Wakefield Park Raceway there, just near Goulburn. He had a fairly premature finish to race number one when his bonnet flew up. He did quite well actually driving it into the pits without hitting anything. So that was quite a good effort, all things considering. Cameron McLean was in the wars, having rubbed with someone. A lot of tyre smoke eventually forced him into the pits to replace the wheel and bang out the guard somewhat. Tony Longhurst, that happened again, didn't it? He's come together with one of the Stone Brothers racing cars, and that was Marcus Ambrose further back in the field. Ambrose was on a real charge trying to make up positions because effectively he was relegated to last after that first turn incident. Larry Perkins had a pretty average weekend as well. Race one, he did not finish due to a power steering problem. So at the end of race one, what we had was Scaife winning quite comfortably by about 5.5 seconds from Craig Lowndes, Bernard, Kelly, Johnson. As I said, Tander repassed Bright to get sixth, so Bright in seventh, Ingle in eighth, Barguana ninth, and then McConville tenth. Seaton back in 11th. Pretty good considering some of his qualifying results had him much further back. Brad Jones and the Oz Email car, a fairly good race one to come out in 12th. Tony Longhurst finished 13th, so really that's where Ambrose should have been as well. They were fighting for position when they came together, and it was Ambrose that ended up finishing back in 16th. Paul Morris, having a pretty troubled weekend as we heard, he finished 15th in that first race. So after race number one, we caught up to David Bernard to have a bit of a chat about his weekend so far and also some of the other issues going around. We had quite an entertaining chat with David Bernard.
Well, so far it's been up and down a little bit. Practice, we were confident having a good car, wheeled it out of the trailer, and we were fifth quickest in the first practice. We thought, great, we were right, we were confident. Everything started, it looked like it was starting to come together. Then the second session, we dropped right back down to sort of midfield. It's like, oh no, what now? And what that turned out to be, and we sort of figured it at the time, was a tyre problem. We'd tested last week, and not many of the other teams did, and probably used up all our tyres. So changing the car around the second session, it felt better, but it wouldn't go any quicker, and we just dropped down the order, and it's like, geez, what now? So the team did a good job. My engineer kept me calm. He said, look, it'll be all right. We'll stick new tyres on it, and it should be fine. And he was dead right. We stuck the new tyres on it and ended up second in qualifying. Then in the shootout, dropped back to third. It was a conservative lap. I thought, well, I'm up here now. There's no point blowing it and going off the end of the track or anything like that. So good conservative lap, ended up third. And then takes us to the first race. Started third, obviously. Got up to second in the pit stops. Great stop by my guys. Got back out in second and just made a little mistake while I was following a lap car that wouldn't let me through. He was on new tyres and ours were already half used. And he wouldn't let me through and just got frustrated and started trying to go a little bit harder and got a little bit wide in one corner. And Adirondack Park, it's sort of known for it. There's a lot of marbles off the off line, and just got off line that little bit and it was like ice out there. So Lowndes got through on me there and had to sort of, end up going third, but that wasn't too bad. It's been a lot better than the rest of the year.
Yes, that was going to be my next question. It's great to see you smiling today, because other race meetings, you've been a bit frustrated with various problems.
Yeah, I've been very frustrated, and when I smiled here for the first time, I was worried my face would crack. It had been a while, but it's been a hard year. Look, I qualified third here. That equaled my best, and that happened to be the first time I drove one of these cars. That was the Queensland 500 last year. I qualified the car for Tony Longhurst in third position in the shootout. And you know, haven't been able to match it since. And what that said to me back then, you know, almost a year ago now, was, oh, cool, I'm going to be, you know, up the top, this will be easy, blah, blah, blah. As it turns out, I couldn't have been further from the truth. I was so wrong. And I've just really had to step it up, work harder at it. I moved up to Queensland from Sydney to be closer to the team, to learn more about the car, to look at data more. I'm just really working hard at it now. We've found some things with the car that probably weren't helping my style of driving, especially in the braking area. Which is where I was lacking at Calder. We actually, you know, broke through there a little bit and went better than we had been, but we're just lacking in braking, and we've found a way to adapt the car to my style rather than me trying to adapt to the car, which I've been trying all year and just hasn't been working. And it's just 100% better now. I can stop as deep as anyone, if not better, you know, just looking so good on the data compared to the drivers that the team's had in the past and whatnot. And that was my weak point in the past, along with a lot of other things. And that's, like I said earlier, just got to work hard in every area. I'm doing that now, and it's all starting to come together.
Is your driving style somewhat different to Marcus Ambrose? Is there a different car setup required?
Yeah, we end up fairly similar here. Quite often we go different ways. But he, by nature, is probably a little bit less aggressive than I am. He probably doesn't drive the wheels off it, so to speak, which in the past was always a strength of mine, Formula Ford and whatnot. Marcus and I raced each other in Formula Ford, and I probably ended up with a bit more success in Formula Ford than Marcus. But that is class has really suited my style. The open wheel class in America suited my style, where you just jump on the brakes really hard and so on. Where these cars are so heavy, there's a lot of mass there, you have to do everything sort of slower and more gentle. You can't just jump on the brakes hard, and it's just taken me a long time to, not to learn it, I learn it, but, you know, instead of trying to, you know, like I said, adapt to the car, we've adapted the car to me a little bit more, and it's just working really nicely now. But I'd say overall we're fairly similar in driving styles, similar sort of a background.
And a lot's often made of the relationship between two drivers within a team. Can you explain your relationship with Marcus and the rest of the team?
Yeah, someone asked me this question earlier, and they said, oh, you guys seem to get along all right. It's almost pretty rare these days, and Marcus and I do. I mean, we've got a huge rivalry. There's no denying that, but it's a healthy one. But we do work together. We look at, we ask each other questions, what are you doing here, what are you doing there, and we look at you know, each other's data. We do a lot of overlaying of the data. You see where I'm quicker or vice versa. And it hasn't worked that great in the past because I was struggling. Last couple of meetings just really started to work better because I've been coming up, so now we can compare there. I have been quicker in areas where before I wasn't. So he can look at that and improve off that. I can improve with his thing. We can see where his car's better or where my car's better, for instance. So, yeah, it's a really good working relationship we've got, but a very strong rivalry as well. We both want to be up the top.
Yes, that's the place to be. Now, some interesting news during the week is the Dunlop will be the control tyre for next year. Do you have any thoughts on that one?
No, you can look at it two ways. A lot of people said, oh, that'll hurt Stone Brothers because they've always run on Bridgestone. But it was only last year that we were running on the tyre that we're running on this year. So we've only had 2 years with this tyre. Marcus and myself have had no years with it. This is our first year on it. So it's not like we've got a bunch of experience on it. Personally, I think it's fantastic. There's a lot of teams that do have the Bridgestone experience. HRT, I'm sure, did a lot of testing for the controlled tyre. So they'd know it back to front. It just sort of resets everything. Everyone starts from scratch, and the best engineer and the best driver or the best driver's feedback, the best team on the day will get it sorted out quicker than those that, you know, will struggle with it. If you haven't got a good relationship with the engineer and the team's not working together, and you know, that's where it'll be at. So it just puts everyone back at the start line again, and let's see who sort of starts pulling away with it.
And do you think having experience in sophisticated open wheelers helps in this category because of the magnificent use now of all of the data logging and the setting up and the short time you have to set up a car?
Yeah, for sure. The more experience you get, the better off you are. In the overall, it definitely helps. But in some ways, it's also hindered my progression in this series. But a lot of old habits from open wheelers and some of that, like we were talking about before, is the braking and that. Some of the things you do to this car to get rid of a certain problem, say understeer, you do the opposite thing in a Formula Ford to fix a problem, and we've actually been through that this weekend. But yeah, that's where I'm lucky, and you know, got a very good engineer and a good team, and he doesn't just say, no, no, it's the opposite. We sit down and he'll explain it to me, and, oh, I understand, and it helps me understand the car better and what it's doing on the track, which is I'm slowly getting, you know, good at giving feedback, where that's been a real downfall at the start of the year because I just was not used to these cars.
David Bernard there, and, yeah, it's great to see some results coming for him because he's definitely a talented driver. Race 2 at Oran Park, we had Mark Scaife on pole, thanks to his victory in race number 1. Craig Lowndes was starting alongside him, and while Lowndes had a slightly better start, it still wasn't as good as he would have liked. So Scaife took the lead from Bernard, from Lowndes, Johnson, and then Tander. Fairly processional there for a little while. John Faulkner was probably the main action, having a number of pit stops unscheduled. Turn one again was the exciting part of the race as these cars worked themselves out. Going into the pit stops, David Bernard was the first to pit. I think he was hoping for a safety car, and of course then he would have been Johnny on the spot. And we sort of nearly had it. Larry Perkins tangling with someone, ending up in the sand at the end of turn one. Yellow flags came out, but Larry Perkins was able to drive away and we avoided the safety car. So Bernard didn't quite capitalise on that as much as he would have liked. Pit stops were reasonably straightforward, and once all the pit stops were over, race leader was Scaife from Bernard, Lowndes, Bright, Tander and Johnson. And some interesting racing further back in the field, particularly Bright coming through the field once again. He really was the driver of the day, even though he didn't end up on the podium overall. Also some good racing further back. John Bauer was having a troublesome day. He was doing his darndest to keep cars behind him, and we saw that unsportsmanship flag waving for John Bauer, but also for a couple of other drivers as well. Larry Perkins was another one who was had reasonable pace, but he did seem to be holding other people up. Craig Lowndes didn't quite have the car set up, so as I said, Bright having that drive of the day coming through the field, passing Lowndes. And in the end, Scaife pulled out quite a big lead from Bernard, and then it was Lowndes. Bright passed Lowndes. Tander, was then the interesting point was, could Lowndes hang on and keep Tander behind him? And with a couple of laps to go, it really was looking pretty tight there for that position with Lowndes and Tander. Coming into the final turn, of course, people may have seen it on the TV, Tander gave Lowndes a bit of a tap, put him into a spin on the very last turn. Lowndes ended up doing a nice big burnout to get back on the track, entertaining the fans quite a bit, but unfortunately he lost a very good position, went back to about seventh position. Tander would have been pretty happy for the effort there for a little while until he was given a 32-second penalty, the supposed equivalent to a stop-go penalty for that move on Lowndes that forced him into the spin. So we can have a quick look at the positions of race number 2, once adjusted for penalties and things like that. And it was Mark Scaife who really did it quite easy. Second place was David Bernard from Jason Bryce in third. Good efforts from Bright, from Stephen Johnson, Russell Ingall, Cameron McConville. McConville in the Lansvale Special Pairs car, having a great weekend. This is their home track, so they're using that to the best advantage. Craig Lowndes down in seventh, Todd Kelly, Paul Radicic, and Stephen Ellery rounding out that top 10. Greg Murphy had a pretty good race, race number 2, effectively coming from last, finishing 11th. Stephen Richards, the better of the Ford Tickford Racing cars, finishing 12th. Brad Jones, again, a consistent weekend in the 13th. Looking at some of the cars who have struggled, a bit down the field, Glenn Seaton, 15th. Garth Tander, with that penalty, ended up in 16th. Paul Morris, remembering that it was Matt Neal who has written off that new car, Paul Morris was racing the old trusty one that won at Calder those few weeks ago. Pretty tough weekend, finished 18th in the second race. And Marcus Ambrose, having engine problems, he did not finish race number 2. So looking at the point score very quickly, before we'll have a quick chat to Scaife and Lowndes in just 1 second, Scaife extends his championship points to 2006, so extends the lead from his teammate Jason Bright, who has 1902. Johnson moves up one spot. He's on 1692, so it's a couple hundred points there difference that Johnson still needs to make up, but the long-distance races to come still have a lot of points on offer. Fourth in the points is Ingall. Lowndes is fifth, having moved up one spot from Ambrose. And the rest of the top 10 is then Murphy, Richards, Radisic and Kelly. And we managed to catch up with Mark Scaife after the racing, and here's what he had to say.
Oh, well, it wasn't that easy, no. I mean, it's always tough, very tough competition in this game, and one of the things that you've got to do at Oran Park is make sure that you can look up the tyres, and the car did a great job of that over the weekend, and as it turned out, it was a great result.
And the first turn of both races seemed to be the most exciting parts of it.
Oh, sure, the first turn of any race is always pretty exciting, and we just had to make sure we didn't make a mistake and didn't make too much contact, and we did a really good job in the first race, and then in the second race I had to be a little bit conservative because my start was very good, but there was a bit of hustle and bustle on with Lounsey and David Bernard, and got out of it okay.
Well, Mark Scaife, all the best for the rounds to come, and that championship is looking like it's coming inside again.
Thank you.
One thing that Mark Scaife was teasing the media about is that his new car that's has been testing a little bit down in Melbourne, and he did boast that it will be already has been 0.2 of a second faster around Phillip Island. So I think a few people would be quite right to be nervous about what HRT are going to unveil for Queensland and Bathurst. Craig Lowndes was also chatting about his car.
Not on par, but the new car is probably radically different to what we're currently driving. The roll cage has had a lot of mods and changes to it. The dash is probably still very similar. The seating position and where I sit is very similar. We'll have our own Gibson engine in it. So there's a few changes to be done. If the car is off the jig, I believe by the time we get home after this weekend, it'll be painted. And then we get stuck in the testing.
And tell us about the pole position you got here.
Well, the first time I've been able to really attack a pole position or the top 10, we got into the top 10 with one set of tyres, and which you need to do just to leave the second set for the top 10. Previous rounds, we've been using both sets just to get into the top 10, so definitely a lot better prepared this weekend. The pole position was fantastic. It was really great for us to really bounce back from a bad weekend at Calder. As I said, the racing probably wasn't as good, but we made some changes. The car was responding, which is great.
And unfortunately, you weren't able to capitalise on that pole position. It was a bit of a slow start in race one.
Yeah, we got a really crappy start on race one, and we fixed it. We got a better start for race two, but still not as good. David Bernard had obviously definitely got the start down pat because he came from the second row to virtually take the lead. So, he must have got a really good start. Something we've got to work on.
But in that first race, you made up a few positions with good pit stop and plenty of on-track action.
Well, definitely, yeah. The Gibson guys do a fantastic pit stop. The routine they've got for that is second to none. So, it's just a matter of coming down, getting in the pits, getting out of the pits as quick as possible. And touch wood, you get out there in front of some of the opposition.
So, race two, you're on the front row once again, but in position number two. Tell us about what happened in race two then.
We went into race two with two strategies. The first one was if we got the lead or if we got out in clean air, we'd really need to put in some fast laps, try and get a gap. Unfortunately, it didn't happen, so we fell into our second little B plan, and which was just really to catch up. And, we were running around in third. The car wasn't as good as I'd like it to be. We made our pit stop. We went back out. We were still in third. We were able to catch David Bernard, but unfortunately didn't have quite have the speed to pass him. So with the car faded during the race, Jason Bright managed to catch him past me. Garth Tander managed to catch me and unfortunately the last corner, the last lap, tagged me and spun me around. So we ended up running seventh, but that's the way it goes.
But at least there on that final corner, you put on a bit of a show for the fans.
Well, yeah, and end up burning up two sets of the total, two rear tyres. So unfortunately, we've only down to two sets because we started the weekend with 10 tyres. So, we lost two tyres, which is a bit unfortunate.
Is it hard to drive with all that smoke in the car?
Well, after I got it back straight on the track again, and after the burnout, we virtually de-treaded the tyres. So we didn't have much grip at all.
Yeah. Well, Craig Lowndes, we look forward to seeing that new car at Queensland Raceway, and all the best for the long race there.
Thank you very much.
So that's it for round 8 of the Australian Touring Car Championship from Oran Park. Reasonably interesting day's racing, even though it was Mark Scaife who cruised to a pretty commanding victory. And in my books, it was Jason Bright who had the drive of the day, really catching and passing a number of cars on the track. He was the one to watch.
And thanks very much to Peter Norton there with his report from Oran Park. Well, last weekend, as you may know, I was at Queensland Raceway, and it gave me a chance to catch up with some of the true characters of Australian motorsport who take part in the Pro Car division. One of those characters is Chrysler Viper driver Darcy Russell. I caught up with him and asked him about the newfound speed that the Vipers are benefiting from.
Absolutely. Well, they come on strong at Canberra. That was our first meeting where we really could say that we turned the corner and we'd all of a sudden we had a race car under our bus. Prior to that, well, look, going back to when we first raced them in Adelaide in April, I mean, they were boulevard cruisers. I mean, they were driven straight off a Dodge dealer's floor in Phoenix. Rusty French and I bought one each, and we done a bit of work over there, and then drove them at a cannon, our own private cannonball from Phoenix down to LA, which was a bit of fun. We put brakes on them, and we thought, well, they're going to be a pretty competitive car, working off the times from the year before, RSCSs and the 355 Ferrari. But unbeknownst to us, because it was early days, no one knew what the Lambo's capabilities were, no one knew what the 360 Ferrari was capable of, and no one really knew what the GT3 Porsche was capable of, because it really hadn't been tested heavily enough. So, in effect, the category went 5 or 6 seconds quicker. Now, that's light years in development. And here we are with these couple of Dodge Boulevard cruisers with some fishy brakes, which were slightly better than what were on it, new. And that's about it. And it was a monster, to say the least. You know, we had troubles in every area. The computers, the braking system, the clutch and the gearbox disintegrated at our first race, you know. In fact, Rusty's gear shift came out in his hand. I mean, they were clearly not up to it, you know. But since then, we always persevered. We always knew what they could be capable of, providing they were given the freedoms that would eventually create some parity. That was given over the time in the way of bigger brakes, a roller rocker conversion, a bigger head conversion, a better exhaust system. That helped, all helped, but it still wasn't enough. We were carrying massive weight, terrific weight at that stage, over 600 kilos. So we then had the full Le Mans aero kit, which came straight off the Dodge Orica factory cars, the Le Mans winning cars. We purchased that. On top of that, we had the Hollinger 6-speed sequential gearbox. Now, those two things alone really transformed the car, particularly the gearbox. And from then on, we've at least now had a chance to have a reasonable package and have a chance to test that package and fine-tune it. Whereas before, we were on this bloody development curve going nowhere and never testing, but we never heard of it, you know. Yeah, they've certainly found a bit of form, and not before time, and we just hope that Procar and whatever don't run off now and go putting penalties on them or anything like that because they've looked good at this particular racetrack. I hope they're a little bit more far-sighted than that. I mean, there will be courses where, irrespective of what trim we've got them in, the Porsches will be quicker or the Ferraris will be quicker. Or whatever, and that's the nature of this category. You're never going to create a total level playing field with 10 or 12 or 15 different marks. It's impossible. So by and large, Procar are doing a hell of a good job with a massive task and a fairly hot task, you know, unthankful task, and they're doing a great job, and their team, you know, Steve Betts and all his team, the girls, Debbie and Anne, and it goes on and on. They're just great people. I don't know how they get the work that they've got to do with all the other categories and have it controlled so well, you know.
For yourself,
as you can see, I like a chat.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
Thanks for being with us. And, of course, Darcy Russell there is one of the true characters of motorsport in... We will be speaking to him throughout the next couple of weeks here on the show, so look forward to more frank comments from Darcy Russell. Until then, it is Taddy, Esso, and the greatest game of all. Australian Rules Football up after this.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple S FM Canberra via Comrade Sat with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.